Hi, this is Mike Joy from NASCAR on Fox. You're on the road with Dane on WGN.
WGN on the road with Dane here in the Allstate Showcase Studio, live on Michigan Avenue. And on the line with us, we've got an award-winning broadcaster and journalist. You've seen him broadcasting sports across the spectrum, including major college football and the Olympics. And of course, in 47 years of the best motorsports broadcasting on this or any planet, and one of the originals from NASCAR on Fox's great coverage since 2001, a big Chicago hometown welcome for the one and only Mike Joy. Welcome to WGN.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Good.
So when it comes down to it, and you look at 1981, ESPN's first broadcast of Sprint Cup, when it comes to putting together the NASCAR Hall of Fame, one of the first guys on the nominating panel for that, the only media guy, and then, of course, that, you know, I think we can all remember back, at least big race fans of a certain age, you know, when that transition happened in the Fox and the NBC packages, when you're gonna want to broadcast racing and make it exciting, and that introduction, you're gonna need Mike Joy.
Well, thank you, appreciate it. It's been a labor of love, that's for sure. And they say if you get to do something you love, you never work a day in your life. So put me among those who are very fortunate.
Well, here's the thing, and you've kind of got a unique background where you have been a part of so many different kinds of sports. You know, I looked in there, saw like swimming, lacrosse, you know, and some of those. Racing is one of the sports, we talk about it all the time on this show, that it's difficult to have a substitute for actually being there. You guys do a great job on Fox with it, but you've got to have all that information, you've got to frame it out, but also, you know, it is entertainment, especially for the viewers. And so what is different for you about kind of broadcasting a race, framing it out, and doing that play-by-play that can make it something people can follow but also enjoy?
I think you don't need to lead people by the hand, even with a sport that's as technically complex as auto racing, whether it's IndyCars or NASCAR or Formula One or World Endurance. You don't need to lead folks by the hand, but you need to kind of guide them along as far as the details behind what they're seeing and try to give cause and effect and maybe set the viewer up for things that could happen. For example, at Charlotte on what became a very late Sunday night, trying to finish up the Coca-Cola 600 after a 1.5 hour rain delay, with 70 laps to go, we had a caution flag and everyone pitted. And it took us probably 8 or 10 laps after that to say, hey, we think there's a couple of cars that can make it on fuel. Going to try not to stop again. It would be a stretch, but we immediately fingered Ryan Newman from Richard Childress Racing because he had a win, and NASCAR's playoff system is if you have a race win, you're pretty much in to the playoffs. So we tabbed Newman, then got along to thinking Jimmy Johnson, and if Newman, why not his teammates, Austin Dillon, Richard Childress's grandson, and Wisconsin's Paul Menard. And it turned out they all did stay out. They did not stop again for gas, as did the fastest cars, because not stopping was their best chance to win the race. And in the outcome, which was pretty thrilling, in the final two laps, with a lap to go, Jimmy Johnson leading, ran out of gas. Austin Dillon took over the lead from him. And here came Kyle Busch and Martin Truex, who both had fuel and had the fastest cars, and came up 0.8 seconds short after 600 miles.
It's the kind of thing, right, where you do have to have that whole cerebral side of it. You think of it, you know, and DWI says you get into the car, you turn into an animal. But that's where you have, you know, your teammate, your crew chief kind of doing that technical side of it, kind of knowing exactly what to do and how to do it and how to manage it in those late stages.
The sport has really turned into a competition among engineers. I mean, yes, you still have to have the driver. He has to have a great deal of bravery and skill and endurance and fortitude to do what he does at nearly 200 miles an hour. But in the pits, there are engineers up on that pit box, and they knew if Austin Dillon ran a certain pace, if he ran a 29.30, 29.30, they knew exactly how much gas he was burning if he could lap the track at that speed. If he ran 29 flat, they knew what that fuel consumption was. And they had it figured perfectly. They did have him turn up the wick and go after Jimmy Johnson, and when Johnson ran out of gas, they had him dial it back. So he crosses the line. The car starts to sputter. He comes around to do his burnout in front of the start-finish line after winning the race. The car does one revolution and dies.
Oh.
It was that. They figured it within a mile and a half it was that close.
Mike, see, it was so great because you went right into it. Of course, you can't help but doing it 47 years. But you were there. I think that was compelling radio for the listeners right there. It was as if you were calling the race and describing some of the action at the same time. I think that was awesome. So kudos to you, my friend. Now, also, too, now here, how has it changed? Because you have been there since the beginning of when television got really serious about going all in on the NASCAR broadcast. And you look at it now and you have the luxury of legends from different eras that kind of blended together. You got Jeff Gordon in the booth now, and of course DW. But from the broadcast side, how has it changed? Certainly, I guess technology, right? Advancements in the things you're able to bring to it, equipment wise.
The biggest difference, Dane, is data. When I started broadcasting NASCAR on radio back in 1976, scoring of the cars, 43 cars in the race, and scoring was done manually. Each driver had a scorer in the scoring stand, keeping track of the time on a clock, a digital clock, each time that car passed the start-finish line. And at the end of 10 laps, you know, you wrote that time down on your scorecard. At the end of 10 laps, you'd write it down. You'd hold up your clipboard. The chief scorer would read the car number on the back of the clipboard in the order that they were held up and pass that along to the radio and TV booth every 10 laps. That was the only scoring we had. So we pretty much had to self-score the race visually as we were describing it. Now, with onboard transponders and with GPS, we know what position each car is in at every moment. We know every position change. We know a driver's last lap, his fastest lap, the last time he was in the pits. We have pretty good telemetry on, did they take left tires? Did they take right tires? Did they take four tires? And we have all this information, which we can both give to the viewer or the listener verbally, and also we can put it up in a crawl across the screen.
Right.
So if your driver's not in the top three or the top five and isn't getting on TV in every other shot, you can watch that crawl and find out where he is all throughout the telecast. And I think that data stream that we can make available to the fans has been the biggest game changer.
Yeah, and you're able to go ahead and convey that too. So making the best use of some of the best stuff as far as the technology, like you said, and the data that is available. Let the listeners know we're talking with NASCAR on Fox's Mike Joy. Now, Mike, you're a racer. You have been a racer, a winning driver. I think one of your sons is in racing, but you were born here in Chicago, and like I said, you know, associated with a bunch of different sports on the broadcasting side, but 47 years on the motorsports. So at what point did you know that racing was going to be your life? And were you close to getting bit by some other sport bugs?
You know, like most kids, I played a lot of baseball as a kid. Would go out and visit, when we moved back east, would go out and visit my grandparents in Chicago. And my granddad took me to my first Cub games when I was seven at Wrigley. And, of course, I was hooked and have been a lifelong fan of the Cubs ever since.
Nice.
But in my teens, what I found as I got to high school was I wasn't strong enough for football. I wasn't powerful enough for baseball. Wasn't tall enough for basketball. I played soccer in college. But once I got into a car and started driving, I realized that when you're in a race car, everybody weighs 3,200 pounds. Everybody has 700 horsepower. It's what you do with it that makes the difference. And it's a sport, as I said earlier, of skill, of strategy, certainly of athletic ability and hand-eye coordination and endurance and will, making that car do something maybe it doesn't want to do when it goes off into that corner. And I think the best analogy I can make it to the fans is downhill skiing. When you're really skiing at a rapid pace and you are carving a turn, you're cutting that turn as your skis are kind of sliding across the snow. And that's the way it is in the race car. You go into a corner and bend that car to your will while the tires are sliding. So you're controlling this guided missile that's slightly sliding out of control. And boy, there's a huge adrenaline rush to that, especially when you get it right. And especially when you're able to win.
Yeah, sure. No doubt. Thanks, Mike. Hold tight. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit about some of your local connections as well. And then also, too, for the listeners, but right at the top of the hour, we're going to have 2 4-packs that we're going to give away for the Burndown at Sundown. So stay tuned here. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN.
Hi, folks. This is Darrell Walsh, a NASCAR analyst on Fox, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
Well, I left Kentucky back in
720 WGN on the road with Dane here, Allstate Showcase Studio, 312-981-7200 to add your thoughts on your favorite cruise night. We're going to talk about the Great Archer Cruise Night coming up a little bit later. Lombard Cruise Night is starting next week. We just got a nice text thanking us for highlighting the Roselle Cruise Night, which has kicked off. I think that's year 17, maybe year 18. Who knows? A guy that's been doing it for about 47 years on the broadcasting side is on the line with us. Excited to have Mike Joy with us. And we are going to talk a little bit about some of the things. People see him on television, but they don't necessarily know about his great Chicago connections.
So on the Cubs side, too, so you were able to maintain your connection with the mighty Cubs. And for a lot of people, it didn't pay off. Maybe they didn't make it on the longevity side, but for a lot of Cub fans around the country, it certainly did. Did you find some? Of course, Kurt Busch, grew up some of his formative years here in Schaumburg in the suburbs here, longtime Cub fan. We'll have him throwing out a pitch a little bit later on this season. So when they finally won it, were you aware of Kurt Busch's affinity for the Cubs or other Cub fans in racing? And did you guys have one of those moments?
Oh, no. Kurt, Kurt's a friend, and the Cubs thing is something we've shared for a long, long time. I'm older than he is, so I've been waiting a lot longer.
Suffering.
Andy Jeffers, our stage manager on Fox, is a dyed-in-the-wool Cubs fan. He went to every series game this year. And, for all of us, for all of Chicago, it's been such a long wait that I guess made it so much sweeter when it finally did happen. And I did get to read a promo a couple of weeks ago. And I said, and I'm proud to say, for the first time in my life, the world champion Chicago Cubs will face, I forget what team it was. I don't care what team it was. Saturday at 1:30 on FS1. And it was fun to be able to do that.
For the memory banks, for a lot of sports fans, of course, that Cubs victory is going to be huge for all of us here. But I think it's just so fascinating that you have been there in some of those really important formative moments in racing. And I think the Hall of Fame is one of those as well, as they try to find a way to sort of canonize some of the legends of the sport, who should be in, who shouldn't be in, and kind of create this an additional mecca, someplace for people year round to be able to go to share some of those memories, to be able to see some of those icons and learn about some of those people. Fred Lorenzen is one that we've got and had up here in the Elmhurst area, where it was not as famous a guy up here, is because racing just wasn't as popular at the time when he was doing it. So talk a little bit about that, just because that had to be some amazing moments, right, where you're sitting there, you're going to do it, you've got whatever financing or backing or support is necessary, and you're going to build a Hall of Fame for NASCAR.
It was a long gestation period. First of all, what city should host it? There was sentiment for Daytona Beach, where stock car racing was born, yep, or Atlanta, where there was a lot of early racing. But Charlotte, being the hub of the sport, eventually finally won out and realized that our Hall of Fame for NASCAR got started a whole lot later in the history of the sport than other Halls of Fame. So we had a lot of catching up to do. But the way the hall is designed, there is only room for 5 major exhibits at a time. So that's the number of inductees we're limited to per year. There are 20 nominees each year. There are over 50 voters. And two unique aspects to the NASCAR Hall of Fame. One is that the current Cup champion of NASCAR, in this case Jimmy Johnson, is in the room with a vote. And the other is that the fans collectively have a vote on NASCAR.com. So during Hall of Fame voting day each May, between the All-Star Race and the Coca-Cola 600, we all gather in this room for an afternoon of very, very spirited discussion. I advanced, as best I could, the candidacy of Alan Kulwicki from Greenfield, Wisconsin, yep, who won the championship in 1992, the last true owner-driver to do so. He did it his way. He had a very small team, a very small budget, but he beat the powerhouse teams of Robert Yates and Junior Johnson and drivers Bill Elliott and Davey Allison on the last day of the season, coming from 300 points behind with half a dozen races to go. And in the final tally of the votes, the fan vote is counted last, and that created a tie between Kulwicki and Ron Hornaday, the multi-champion of NASCAR's Truck Series.
Right.
Hornaday won the tiebreaker, but I'm very, very confident we'll get Allen in next year. And, stock car racing has always been around Chicago. No, we never had a big speedway. We had Santa Fe Speedway out in the suburbs, and you could always go up to the Milwaukee Mile or go east one state to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. But, stock car racing took a long time for it to become regarded as a major league sport there in the Chicago area, and I was very glad to see Fred Lorenzen you know, the Elmhurst Express finally get his due.
Yes. Well, you, Mike Joy, you have been one of those guys to help shepherd NASCAR stock car racing into kind of that prominence as one of the major sports, being there for a lot of those formative moments. And one of the great things about it is that each one of these tracks and these races are destinations, so much traveling, camping, road trip, tailgating, all the kind of stuff that is fun, kind of those ancillary, you know, experiential things that go on in sports. But for racing, nobody does it bigger. So this week they're going to be in Dover at the Monster Mile. And so I wanted to ask you, as we talk with a lot of our guests about great road trips that they've done or great places that they've gone with the family, certainly the races are those. Did you guys do any of those when you were a kid? And have you and your family, I know you've been traveling a long time with the sport. Have you kind of done those family road trips?
Our whole family went to Charlotte and stayed in the motorhome all weekend. Taking in, let's see, Leonard Skinner on Sunday, and I think it was Justin Moore on All-Star Weekend. My daughter loves going to concerts. My son is very into racing. He drives as well as comes to a lot of the events with me. As a kid, we lived in Connecticut, so we either did train trips to Chicago on the 20th Century Limited, or we did road trips, you know, across the Pennsylvania and Ohio, Indiana turnpikes and toll roads to see my grandparents in Evanston and later in Wilmette. So, yeah, a lot of road trips. And, of course, before the interstate highways, it was a lot different and took a lot longer than it does now. But, yeah, great family moments. And for families going to races, it is a great family experience. Discounted tickets for the biggest races at a lot of these tracks for kids. And a lot of camping, tailgate parties. Yeah, it is. It really is a great weekend experience.
And the last thing, too, is, and we share this with a lot of our guests as well, is what was your first car? So, you know, obviously racing at a relatively young age. Did you have something really impressive, or was it something you weren't maybe excited to share with people?
I wanted a sports car. And my dad, who was much smarter than me, said that a bigger car would be much better for a first-time driver. I wanted a stick shift. My dad said an automatic would be a much better choice for a young driver. You have an awful lot to learn and adapt to without having to worry about what gear you're in or, you know, whether you're hitting the clutch pedal the right way. So this was in 1967, and my first car was a 60 Chevy Impala convertible.
Oh, that's very cool.
Had that for 2 years, had a lot of fun with it, sold it. My next car was a little Mini Cooper S with a 4-speed, and after that came an Alpha Spider with a 5-speed. So, you know, eventually got into sports cars and into sticks, but yeah, that first one had a lot of fun with that.
Oh, so he has been on the road for a very long time, and of course sharing all that action on the road and the tracks for 47 years as one of the greatest motorsports broadcasters of all time. We're going to enjoy, of course, this weekend out in Dover at the Monster Mile and all season long on Fox, as we've been doing since 2001. So Mike, thanks so much for what you're doing. Any social media you want to share? If you guys, you know, out with all your adventures, you're going to share some of the things that are going on, you can let the listeners know.
Yeah, all the Fox broadcasters have a pretty big presence on Twitter. Daryl is All Waltrip. Jeff Gordon is at Jeff Gordon Webb, and I'm at MikeJoy500. We're also all in Cars 3, which premieres June 16th. We got to see it last week in a sneak preview for NASCAR Insiders. First time anybody outside Pixar had seen the movie, and it is a riot. My daughter said I was laughing so hard I embarrassed her. And was glad to do it because it's a hoot. It's fun. If you enjoyed the original Cars, you're going to love this.
Oh, great broadcasting, great advice, and great insight. So thanks so much, Mike. Get back to doing what you're doing. Congratulations on the graduation, and we'll talk to you soon.